Welcome to a special We Can't Make This Stuff Up edition of It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon, and I can't wait for this podcast. Where do you start?
Seriously, it's a total jump ball. Who embarrassed himself the most in American politics in this week, other than you and me?
Is it Rick Santorum saying that John McCain doesn't understand what torture is all about?
That gets my vote in the long run. The Hall of Fame, that gets my vote.
You don't think of the decline and fall of Newt Gingrich?
I do think probably the most important development on the presidential front was Newt Gingrich's self-immolation or Rocky rollout or any of the other things that it's been called. But talk about stumbling in the gate. This guy had not even gotten to Iowa.
But here's the thing, though. Newt Gingrich, I mean, was he ever that high that he fell so far? I mean, he really never got up that far in the polls, was never anybody's choice.
He collapsed from 10 to 0. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, he was out of 100. Yeah.
He was never up there. 10 or 11 percenter in the polls at the best.
But let's give it some context here. Here he went on Meet the Press.
Do you think that Republicans ought to buck the public opposition and really move forward to completely change Medicare, turn it into a voucher program where you give seniors some premium support and so that they can go out and buy private insurance?
I don't think right-wing social engineering is any more desirable than left-wing social engineering. I don't think imposing radical change from the right or the left is a very good way for a free society to operate.
Now, the question is, was he wrong? I mean, in other words, maybe Newt Gingrich was saying that, wait a second, maybe this is radical.
It's not a question of the thought that he had. Newt Gingrich oftentimes has thoughts that are quite defensible or something that you can argue, but something that makes a certain amount of sense intellectually. It's not the thought. It's the expression in certain words.
I agree with you completely.
Radical social engineering. It's probably better to call something radical than to call it social engineering if you're talking to Republicans.
Right-wing social engineering.
He said it was right-wing social engineering. Yeah. You could not have gotten a tougher critique of Ryan's plan if you had brought on Dennis Kucinich. And what was even more stunning was he didn't seem to realize it.
Well, yes, and he didn't realize that seems to be the rallying cry for the Republican Party in 2011. This is what we're going to rally
stand behind. Concept of Paul Ryan's plan.
In fairness, not all the 2012 Republican candidates have signed on to this.
Oh, no. And in fact, you could say that the House Republican leadership, like Eric Cantor, have been kind of backing off of it a little bit and saying, well, we don't necessarily have to go with every detail in that plan. And of course, the one that they're most upset about is the Medicare becoming a voucher/private insurance program, which is what the plan does for people who are today 55 or younger. When they get to 65, let's not alienate the listener by telling them they're listening to two old geezers. And the weird thing is, Newt has all through the week maintained that it was an illusion that he had said something wrong.
Oh, no, that's the worst part. Not only does he have a history of saying intemperate things that often his own Republican Party has to apologize for or distance themselves from, but then he says, no, it never happened.
Well, and then, of course, he calls Paul Ryan to apologize to him because he really has to do that at this point. People are demanding it all over.
Paul Ryan had said, I expect this from the left. You know, I'm expecting this.
With friends like this, who needs the left?
Right.
But the other thing he's been saying is, no, you misunderstood. And anyone who plays that tape,
if the Democrats
from if they try to make an ad against me, or if any opponent tries to make an ad against me with that tape in it, it's a lie.
Yeah, but one, I mean, it happened. This sounds so 1984.
Okay.
And two,
do we need a two?
Yes, we do need a two, because it's not the left, it's not the Democrats, it's not even the left-wing media.
Oh, it's the liberal press.
It's the Republicans who were just saying, what's going on here? That there was a Republican who approached Newt Gingrich in Iowa and said, you're an embarrassment.
Extraordinarily real-seeming person who seemed to be quite truly indignant.
You're an embarrassment to our party.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
Why don't you get out before you make a bigger fool of yourself?
There's been a lot of reporting over, you know, so many presidential candidates opened up their campaign with that kind of gaffe. Joe Biden did it twice, 1987 with the Neil Kinnock quote, and 2007 with Barack Obama being bright, articulate, and clean, and good-looking.
He recovered rather better from the latter of those two mistakes.
Well, where is he now?
I think he made up with Barack Obama.
I think he did. And Newt Gingrich is not the only presidential candidate who had an embarrassing week.
This Santorum quotation, again, we don't know how Newt recovers from the week that he's had, but really, truly, in terms of something that just makes your head feel absolutely lifted off of your body, how could someone, as Rick Santorum did this week, say, well, John McCain in his position...
Here's a quote. He doesn't understand how enhanced interrogation works. John McCain.
Yes. a man who was a captive of the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War for 5 years, right, and we know was extensively tortured to this day, cannot lift his arms above his shoulders. How can Rick Santorum, who served in the Senate with McCain, how could he make a statement like this?
Well, I mean, his argument is that it was torture that basically got us to bin Laden on May 1st.
And we've been back and forth about this, the Cheney viewpoint, the Rumsfeld viewpoint, you know, it was because of the enhanced interrogation, i.e. torture.
And that debate is still going on, but to even suggest that John McCain does not know about torture is just beyond the pale.
Okay, now here again, like with Gingrich, the follow-up is almost as bad as the original gag.
Yeah, he said, I respect the senator and what he has had to endure, but he's still wrong.
All right. Now let's say, in the midst of this forest fire of a field, it seems to me that Mitt Romney is looking better and better. He is raising money. He held a fundraiser. He raised
$10.25 million.
Now, and as we know, millions are no longer the real currency in presidential politics. It needs to be tens of millions, hundreds of millions. We're talking about a $1 billion presidential reelection campaign. Still, one event, $10 million for somebody who is not the incumbent president or clearly the nominee of either party, is an extraordinary amount and deserves a salute. Not maybe quite so much the defense that he made of Romney Care, which is widely acknowledged to be the model for Obamacare, in his defense of his time as governor in Massachusetts.
Well, of course, you know, his biography is no apology, and he was not going to...
That was the title of his biography.
That's the title of his biography, and he's not about to make an apology for several reasons. One, he has changed his position, as we saw in 2008, from so many positions he's held when he ran against Ted Kennedy for the Senate in 94, when he ran for governor of Massachusetts in 2002, regarding choice, regarding immigration. And that was, I think, his biggest problem, not the religion stuff. You can talk about religion and Mormonism all you want. I think the fact that many voters just did not trust him. So he could not dare in 2011, 2012, saying, well, I was wrong on Romney Care.
Can't pull another flip-flop.
But this doesn't work, though, to say that, well, the only reason my policy is different than President Obama's policy is I don't have a one-size-fits-all. This was a state problem, and here's a state solution, whereas Obama is government control of health care. But basically, they're still very, very similar. And if Obamacare was what got a conservative so agitated in 2010, why would they not be equally agitated with Romney Care?
I cannot see a logical reason why they would not, except to say that, in the end, a challenge to an incumbent president involves a national referendum on that incumbent president, and it involves, if you will, a sort of secondary referendum on the just plain acceptability of the challenger from the other party. If the country wants to change horses, it just looks over at the other horse and says, can I imagine riding that one? And moves over if it can. Ronald Reagan in 1980, Bill Clinton in 1992. They made themselves acceptable. In many ways, Reagan was not Ronald Reagan in 1980. He was just a former governor of California. A lot of people still thought of him as being kind of far out there. Some people still do. But he was not the Ronald Reagan of legend and myth in 1980. And certainly Bill Clinton in 1992 had tons of baggage and had incredible problems, some of which, you know, came back to bite him in the course of his presidency.
But you're absolutely right. 1980 was not so much whether Ronald Reagan was too extreme as whether you want 4 more years of Jimmy Carter.
Exactly.
Same in 1992, 4 more years of George H.W. Bush.
I'm saying what you want is a candidate in 2012. If you're a Republican, you want somebody who looks acceptable, somebody who, like Mitt Romney, looks the part, is a pretty solid establishmentarian kind of figure, a Republican who can unite the Republican Party, even if much of the Republican Party is not very excited about him, and attract the votes of independents. That's what you want, and not some very radical kind of coming out from an ideological corner of the party.
Oh, that's not Mitt Romney. The problem is, remember, he ran after the Huckabees and the McCains in 2008, saying they were not ideologically pure. And for Mitt Romney to do that, you're just risking a complete examination of his record.
Okay, let me throw this out, and we can argue about it, and I'll be embarrassed to hear it played back months from now. But I would say at this point, with every one of these candidacies that shows itself to be a house of cards, Gingrich, Santorum, Huckabee, he was just pushing it out to the limit before he would admit that what he really wanted to do was stay on television. Donald Trump also pushing it out
to the limit.
No, no, there's a huge difference between Huckabee and Trump.
You.
Ron Paul's another one of these people. He's going to rise up to a certain point, and then people are going to say, did he just say that? Did he just say we should pull all our troops immediately
out?
But did he just say we should legalize marijuana?
Yeah. And the people who love him say that's the right thing to do. The people who think he's too far out say that this is Ron Paul
this
all over
This is not
again.
How you defeat a sitting American
president.
Well,
nobody thinks Ron Paul or Donald Trump.
The Barry Goldwater model that was tried in 1964. Hey, Barry Goldwater had a lot to say, a lot more than most of the people in this field by far. And Barry Goldwater was a legitimate hero of the American conservative movement. And he got crushed
right.
in 1964. So I don't think that we have fundamentally changed the dynamics of American politics, even over all these years. And I do think what they're looking for is somebody who is an acceptable alternative if the referendum on Barack Obama is negative in 2012. And it seems to me Mitt Romney fits that. It also seems John Huntsman fits that. And I don't see other people in the field, with the possible exception of Mitch Daniels, if he gets in, which he hasn't yet, I don't see other people in this field filling that bill.
Well, here's the thing about John Huntsman. Now, for the longest time, I thought he was really biding his time for 2016, but he seems to be hiring some pretty big names. Whit Ayers has signed on with him.
He's a pollster from the South.
Huntsman also seems to be, like, talking about a headquarters in Orlando, Florida. Now, the argument against John Huntsman is that, you know, the conservatives never felt he was one of them. He's a conservative, but he's supported...
On the great spectrum.
But, you know, civil unions he supports, which is, you know...
Not terribly conservative
no,
position.
No, and you just wonder if only Mitch Daniels would run, if only John Huntsman would run, and then once they run, they get clobbered by this new... The new Republican Party. I mean, we saw, you know...
You mean the Tea Party. You're really talking about the Tea Party purity.
Tea Party, but also slash the social conservatives, you know, Tea Party was not...
You're right. Those are two different things.
Right, which basically has defined Michelle Bachmann. Michelle Bachmann seems to be the Tea Party slash social conservative, and at some point we may want to talk about what Mike Huckabee leaving the race might do to the field, and it may help somebody like a Michelle Bachmann
Well, it
in
could also
Iowa.
Help Tim Pawlenty. I mean, yeah, he doesn't fit the group we are talking about as well as Michelle Bachmann. He's not the hero of either the Tea Party nor the social conservatives.
No.
She much better fits that bill.
I think he's kind of trying to be everything to everybody. That's what it seems like with Pawlenty, because he's
running for vice president, in my humble opinion.
Well,
but
that was 4 years ago he was running for vice president. I don't think he's running for vice president anymore.
Not in this field. In this field, he looks like a relatively strong figure.
But going back to John Huntsman, though, I mean, everybody, we say that, you know, this is somebody who could defeat Barack Obama because he's a moderate conservative, but there's a difference between a November general election electorate and a battle to win the hearts and minds and soul of the Republican Party.
That is correct. And in fact, there are many different contests in that battle for that soul. And it starts in Iowa, which is a state where the social issues tend to be more important. New Hampshire, where they tend to be a little less important, and the fiscal issues, the tax issue has been paramount in the past. Then we go down to South Carolina, where you have a real contest for conservatism's most profound believers. And there's more of a military context there. The military has been historically important in South Carolina, and that's not quite so much the case in Iowa and New Hampshire. So they're all a little bit different. Then you get to Super Tuesday, you've got some of these mega states. And
if it goes that long.
Then it becomes a question of money. And some of these candidates are going to have a lot of trouble being really competitive in the big television markets. That's why Iowa and New Hampshire matter to them.
And not John Huntsman, who can self-finance.
Personal wealth.
Yeah.
In fact, he is a good deal wealthier even than Mitt Romney, who ran into some fiscal problems in 2008 and had to decide how much of his personal fortune he was going to commit to the race.
You know what bothers me, though? Every time we say about Michelle Bachmann, I said, well, can Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin both run, as if the field is not big enough for two women? And so people say the same thing about Huntsman. And
it's not just that they're two women. It's that they have very similar profiles in terms of their presentation.
My only point of comparing Palin and Bachmann and whether the field is, you know, not big enough for them is that whether people say, well, can Romney and Huntsman both run because
they're
Mormons?
Because they're both Mormons, yeah. Well,
I mean,
and
how
and
much of a Mormon vote is there in the Republican primaries?
It's not that you're competing for the Mormon vote. It's essentially that you assume that there are a certain number of people in those primaries who will not vote for a Mormon, and therefore the number of people who will vote for a Mormon is going to be split between these two guys. It's not a real Mormon vote. It's just a non-anti-Mormon
vote. Why do you
vote.
Hear it more about Romney than you hear about Huntsman? Maybe because nobody's talking.
He's been around longer,
yeah,
and I think a lot of people haven't heard of John Huntsman, one. Number two, they'll hear, didn't he go to China as the ambassador for Barack Obama? And then the third thing they're going to hear is probably that he's another Mormon, because he's been governor of Utah. That's pretty obvious.
And the last Mormon to run for president?
Besides George Romney?
Yeah.
That would be Udall.
Yeah, Mo Udall.
Mo Udall from Arizona.
Do you remember anybody ever saying that he was a Mormon?
Well, but he was a Jack Mormon. He was a kind of Mormon who doesn't really...
It's the Republican, it's the evangelical conservatives who really seem to have the objection to Mormonism, so that's
And also we were talking about a different party. In the Democratic Party, people didn't really, you know, in 1976 when he was running, they didn't think of Mormonism as being some kind of a big deal or a big threat, and it wasn't as though Mo Udall wore it on his sleeve to any degree. But yes... No one ever talked about it back in that era, and it was a very different time.
Leaving the presidential field, the big news of the week, it seems to be in the Senate race in Wisconsin. Herb Kohl deciding not to run after all the, you know, being in office since 1988.
Yes, being in office is probably a pretty good way to describe it. Most people, I think, would have a hard time picking Herb out of a lineup. He doesn't speak on the floor very often. He doesn't make a big splash outside of Wisconsin. But back in Wisconsin, he was known as a great champion of the dairy industry. He was known as the owner of the Milwaukee Bucks. He was known as a guy who didn't generate a lot of controversy, so he could vote like a liberal Democrat, but take very little of the personal criticism that Russ Feingold took for voting the same way. When Russ Feingold went down in 2010, it was largely seen as a repudiation of his ideology and his politics. In Herb Kohl's case, he would vote almost exactly like Russ on almost everything. In fact, in some respects, he was more of a Democrat, a more reliable vote, less of a maverick, and yet he never seemed to be in any kind of trouble, and nobody was going to challenge him for a fifth term if he had gone after it in 2012. But now that he is stepping out, well, suddenly there's a crowded field in both parties.
Well, still trying to assess what it all means and what the political climate might be. Obviously, you know, we keep talking about Tommy Thompson, but if Tommy Thompson, and everybody says he's definitely running, the former four-term governor, my feeling is that if Tommy Thompson didn't run in 2010, which was the best Republican landscape...
He didn't see that coming. He didn't see Russ Feingold as being as vulnerable as he was. Well, if he had,
but Tommy Thompson's always that kind of tease.
But he's clearly wanted to get back into politics. Yeah. And 2010 was the perfect opportunity. Could have run for governor, could have run for senator. Right. Didn't do either one. The state wound up with a couple of people in those roles who are relatively rookies. I mean,
Scott Walker and
very
Ron
young
Johnson.
Man. Right. Ron Johnson never run for office before. I think it's safe to say Tommy Thompson could have had either one of those nominations and would have won either of those two races.
Does he run this year? Next year?
I think he is kind of serious about it because now he realizes that this is really the last train that's leaving. He's got a Republican in all the other offices that he could run for. This is his last real opportunity, but I think he's going to find a couple, three things are different. One, he's not going to be able to raise money the same way, and he doesn't have a lot of money of his own. Number two, he's going to find out that a lot of people in Wisconsin don't remember him the way he remembers himself. He's been gone since 2001, when he took a job in George W. Bush's cabinet. And I think he's going to find that the party has really moved on and moved hard to the right.
That is, I think, of all those things, I think that's the key. As soon as the name Tommy Thompson came out this week as a potential candidate for Herb Kohl's Senate seat, Chris Ciccola, the head of Club for Growth, said, completely unacceptable that he raised taxes during the 80s and 90s when he was governor of Wisconsin, and this is not what the Republican Party stands for.
Yeah, he didn't raise taxes much. I mean, let's put this in perspective. I mean, you don't want to make him sound like some sort of a liberal Democrat. He was considered a conservative Republican in Wisconsin, very pro-business. He tried to shrink the size of government. He tried to make government less regulating. He was the man who put in place the template for what became the welfare overhaul of 1995, really shrank the welfare rolls in Wisconsin, was a conservative in the politics of that state in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Right. But he's been out for 10 years, and the politics have changed.
Quickly, leaving Wisconsin for 1 second, Rick Berg, the freshman member of Congress from North Dakota who announced his Senate candidacy this week. Also, the Club for Growth said, the Tea Party said, he's not our kind of guy. I mean, these are conservative Republicans. So this is going to be very interesting.
Conservative Republicans by traditional means of measurement and by our lights, perhaps. But in the eyes of the Tea Party, in the eyes of the grassroots of what is energizing the Republican Party in the Midwest and many other parts of the country as well, they're not their kind of guy.
No, Tommy Thompson is not somebody who's going to energize Tea Party conservatives. Staying in Wisconsin for a second, you mentioned Russ Feingold a few minutes ago. Russ Feingold, a possible Senate candidate?
I don't think so. No. He hasn't apparently made any of the moves that you would expect somebody to make. On the other hand, he has almost perfect name recognition. Anybody who hasn't heard of Russ Feingold is not interested in politics in Wisconsin. There does not seem to be an automatic Democratic candidate in view at this point. A couple of the Congress people.
Tammy Baldwin from
Madison has talked about running.
Very liberal and Ron Kind.
She would define the left side of the party on social and fiscal issues. Ron Kind, more of a moderate, you know, former college quarterback, good-looking guy. He could be more of a traditional sort of candidate. And, you know, there are going to be people who look around for some new face on the Democratic side. But I don't see one. Oh, the other guy to talk about would probably be Tom Barrett, the mayor of Milwaukee, who ran for governor last year in 2010.
Jack Clobbered, yeah.
In a better year for Democrats, probably would have done a little better. I don't see him as a formidable candidate for the Senate.
Oh, plus the fact that I assume that 2012, they're going to still be fighting over Scott Walker and his positions on collective bargaining rights.
Public employees, collective bargaining, or at least very limited.
Recall elections, perhaps, of Scott Walker.
So. They already have recall elections this year.
July.
I mean, they're already recalling the Democratic members of the Senate who went to Illinois to get away, and they're recalling Republican members of the Senate.
I just recalled Gaylord Nelson. That's been a long time.
Yes, and I said we shouldn't identify our age on the podcast.
Can we also recall Todd Akin in Missouri?
Let's think a little bit about Todd. Does he fit into this dynamic of somebody who's conservative enough for the last decade but not conservative enough for the Tea Party?
You know, I think he's the real deal. I think he could very well be the Republican nominee against Claire McCaskill in Missouri. Akin announced his candidacy this week. There are some self-funders, a millionaire businessman, conservative, who may very well also get in that race, but Claire McCaskill is certainly vulnerable in that list of vulnerable Democrats for 2012.
Oh, sure. She was one of the people who won in 2006 because people were unhappy with the status quo in Washington and unhappy to some degree with their status quo back in Missouri, and she beat Jim Talent, the Republican incumbent.
Narrowly,
very narrowly, and Obama did not carry Missouri, although it was close, in 2008. Certainly not one of the first states that you would assume would be going for him in his reelection campaign, so it's probably going to be at least a decent year for Republicans there. Claire McCaskill won't have the wind at her back she had in 2006, and she has made a number of missteps of her own that we've talked about here on the podcast.
There was some voting this week. I mean, we had David Williams, for example, is the Republican president of the Kentucky State Senate. He will be the GOP nominee against Steve Beshear, the governor there. And the field is set in the special West Virginia gubernatorial race because they have a special race this year because Joe Manchin left to succeed Robert Byrd in the Senate. So there will be a special West Virginia governor's race. But I'm very fascinated what happened this week in California 36. That's the Jane Harmon seat, coastal Los Angeles County, that Jane Harmon gave up the seat.
Nobody won a majority.
Well, there were 16 candidates on the ballot. Nobody expected anybody to get a majority, but everybody expected that the top two candidates, and remember, California has this new system where
everybody's
candidate,
on one ballot,
regardless of party, and the top two finishers, regardless of party, move on to a runoff if nobody gets 50%. Everybody expected the top two to be two Democrats.
Exactly.
Janice Hahn, the Los Angeles City Council member, and Deborah Bowen, the Secretary of State. Bowen may have finished third to Craig Huey, a Republican. He's endorsed by his two brothers.
Dewey and Louie.
That's exactly right.
And but what you have here is a very large field of Democrats and the vote being split in a lot of different directions and the Republicans coming out to vote in hopes that they could get one candidate through.
Nobody feels that the Democratic control of this seat is in jeopardy, but the fact that Deborah Bowen did not, and again, there were like 10,000 absentee and provisional ballots out there.
So we'll see.
She still could make it.
She could still make it, but she probably won't be the winner in the runoff. That would appear at this point to be Janice Hahn. All right. Well, that's basically the shattering of the party vote for the Democrats in California, in this Southern California seat. We have the split on the conservative side in a safely conservative seat in New York that could result in a Democratic surprise there.
And I don't know why it's a split on the conservative side because the so-called...
Because the Tea Party's name is
And
in
the
there.
Tea Party candidate, Jack Davis, is a Democrat who got money from Charles Rangel when he was running for Congress in 2006 and 2008 and 2010.
But now he's part of the Tea Party. Just ask him.
Exactly.
He says he is.
And although he doesn't show up in any debates, he doesn't show up with the other candidates. But here's the thing. Special congressional elections are often, we remember, you think of Jack Murtha in Pennsylvania with Watergate.
I often think of Jack Murtha in Pennsylvania in 1974.
And David Obey in 1969 in Wisconsin.
Oh, 69 in Wisconsin.
An opposition to Richard Nixon's policy on the war in Vietnam. So you think of this as a referendum on the president, but this could be a referendum on Republican control of the House. And the Republican candidate, Jane Corwin, is running on the defensive in a solidly Republican district.
And she is a New York State legislator.
Yeah,
somebody with a very strong record, somebody who would seem the ideal candidate here. You can't say this is any fault of hers. It seems to be entirely about the Paul Ryan plan, although people will show up and they will vote as Republicans and Democrats, and it's all a question of turnout. This is a very Republican district. Well, some people say it's one of the top 10 Republican districts in the country in terms of being a heavy vote turnout for Republicans. So it's really going to be a feather in the cap for the Democrats if they can get Kathy Hochul in here. She's a good candidate. She's a fine candidate.
Yeah, she is.
But
but, county clerk.
But it isn't like she's, you know, been an astronaut or in some sense or another hero or heroine of that part of New York. And I don't think that there's been anything particularly wrong with the campaign that Jane Corwin has run either. She's a perfectly acceptable New York state legislator and a good candidate.
But you know that if Hochul wins the race, this will be portrayed as a referendum on everything, and this will be portend what it'll mean for 2012. And of course it doesn't. Remember,
it's hard to say that it does.
Two words, Didi Scozafava. I mean, when the Democrats won
that. Is that just two words?
But when the Democrats won that House seat in 2009, everybody says, wait, this is great news for the Democrats in 2010.
Going up.
That's long gone.
It is long
gone. One thing I want to talk about before we leave here is because the thing about Arnold Schwarzenegger, and yes, he's a former governor. Yes, we don't usually spend time on the podcast talking about sex stuff for obvious reason, but there's something about, and this is my same objection I have about John Edwards.
Creepy factor.
Well, not so much creepy factor, yes. And the fact is that not only did he impregnate this woman, but she was still working on the Shriver's
staff
for 20
years. There are pictures of her
years.
Pregnant next to Maria Shriver, who was also pregnant
How
at the same time.
How you disrespect your wife to that extent is just beyond.
I will throw this out. I think this is a kind of another century notion of what a certain kind of man considers himself entitled to.
Right.
Sexual relations with anybody in his ambit. So you have Dominique Strauss-Kahn sitting in Rikers Island right now because he has this attitude. Any woman he sees is a woman he can have and have in any manner that he sees fit.
And apparently
and John Ensign. We just have seen the Senate Ethics Committee report on John Ensign, who had already resigned as soon as he saw where that report was going. Embarrassingly devastating report. He had to get out of politics. So that had just happened.
And he still may not be off the hook.
And he may very well still be prosecuted. It's been referred to the Department of Justice for possible prosecution. They're still trying to decide whether or not to go to court against John Edwards, as you mentioned. We're not just dredging these up. These are all live cases right now boiling to the surface of the political cauldron and all sending a certain message about the attitudes of powerful men.
And politically, though, I mean, just like with John Edwards running for president in 2007, 2008, while he's carrying on this affair, Arnold Schwarzenegger running for governor in 2003, trying to unseat Gray Davis.
After this woman has given birth to
exactly.
His.
And so this could blow up on him at any time. And are they so indestructible and invulnerable that
got away with it up to now. Why should I not get away
and
with it?
And the irony is that
in for a dime, in for a dollar.
And the irony is back in 2003, during that California recall election, it was Maria Shriver, where all those rumors about groping and fondling and all
and
that
the
stuff.
The LA Times really went after him.
They did.
Hammer
she,
and tong.
She said absolutely not. Basically, Maria Shriver
saved him.
Came to the rescue of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Made him governor.
Yeah. Yikes.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
You keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but confess. You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin'. And now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Yeah.